I should have known what Tactus would do. He killed his first Primus, Tamara, in the Institute. He only ever followed strength. Only ever sought victory. I knew he was a beast, but I thought he was my beast. I thought I could trust him. No. I thought I could change him. I curse myself. Arrogant fool. I stalk back to the cockpit, where Augustus addresses the blue pilot.
Pilot, will you be able to take us clear?
No, Dominus. Geomet models don't show a probability of escape.
Her response is fittingly blue. Emotionally distant, efficient, and declarative. Her body is thin, faintly avian, like she's made all of twigs. Neck long, bald head slightly smaller. Eyes large and as uncannily azure as the digital tattoos of her skull. When she moves, it's as though she's submerged in water. Asteroid-born, judging by her flat accent.
What is the likely scenario?
They will destroy our engines with ripwing fire, precipitating a hull breach that will kill all aboard. Alternatively, precipitating a leechcraft assault, capturing all aboard.
Or they'll just blast us from the gory sky.
Blue, deliver me to my ship and you will receive command of a frigate.
I would prefer a cruiser.
A cruiser, then.
Very well.
The Blue adjusts several knobs.
I will fly well, but the paradigm must be altered before they engage our vessel if we are to survive.
The Stark climbs toward the edge of Luna's atmosphere. This ship is a big-bellied beast. Fat with storage room, because all they're meant to do is birth soldiers out of the tubes in their guts. Men like me would tear her apart in our ripwings. We used ships like this at the Academy to launch men in star shells at enemy asteroid bases. Friction fire wreathes the ship.
If the hull is breached, hold your breath, Domini. We do not have sufficient survival helmets aboard.
Our lungs will explode if we do that.
Then exhale and have 30 secs of life while eardrums explode and blood vessels swell like inflated balloons. I will hold my breath.
Severo looks back at me, wide-eyed.
I hate space.
You hate everything.
We pop clear of Luna's atmosphere. The fire fades, and we slip into open space, where the Armada's capital ships glide like behemoths of Europa's deep sea. Gun turrets dot their hide like barnacles, and hangar bays slice their undersides like great gills. Commercial ships float slowly along the shipping lanes. Ripwings and wasps go about their patrols. None pay heed to our presence, except those that escort us from Luna. The Sovereign would not broadcast this. Time ticks away. There is nowhere to flee. We thought to pass just under the guns of the Scepter Armada when we had Lysander. But now we'll have to run the gauntlet. Our pilot is calm as metal. She said the paradigm must change. What can I do? Think. Think.
We will open communications to one of the ships. Bribe them into sheltering us. Every man has a prize.
We're jammed. Can't even broadcast.
We're going to die. We all know it. Augustus doesn't panic or surrender resolve. I don't know how I thought he'd handle death. Maybe I hoped he would wail about and turn pale. But for all his faults, he is stalwart. After a moment, he sets a bony hand on Mustang's shoulder. She flinches, surprised.
Whether missile or boarding craft come, die like golds.
Augustus says solemnly to us. Not because he wishes us to think him strong in his last moments, but because he believes in what he is. A superior being. A master of his human frailties. For him, death is merely the ultimate frailty. Humans whimper when they die. They claw for life, even if there is no hope. He will not. Death is not grander than his pride. Golds, in many ways, are so like Reds. Helldivers go to their deaths for their families, for the pride of their clan. They do not whimper when the mines collapse around them, or when the pit vipers come from the shadows. They fall and their friends weep and sweep their bodies aside. But we have the Veil to look forward to. What of the Golds? When they perish, their flesh withers and their name and deeds linger till time sweeps them away. And that is all. If anyone should claw for life now, it should be the Aureate. I claw because I carry the torch of something that must not die, must not go out. That is why I grab Sevro on the shoulder and, with a horrible, eerie laugh, tell the pilot to take us closer to the deadliest ship in orbit, one which now has angled itself to intercept us.
Take us near the Vanguard,
I repeat to the Blue.
That would cause our chances of survival to decrease by...
Never tell me the odds. Just do it.
Everyone turns and looks at me. Not because I've said something strange, but because they've been waiting to turn and look at me. They've all been silently praying I would marshal a plan. Even Augustus. Io said people would always look to me. She believed I had some quality, some essence that gave hope. I rarely feel it in myself. There is none in me now, just dread. Inside, I feel such a boy. Angry, petulant, selfish, guilty, sad, alone. And yet they look to me. I almost break underneath their gaze. Almost wither away and ask someone else to take the reins. I can't do it. I'm small. I'm just a liar in a carved body. But that dream must not be extinguished. So I act, and they watch.
You gone space mad? When they realize we don't have the boy.
Draw an anchor toward the Vanguard's bridge.
Mustang tells the Blue. Augustus gives me a curt nod, guessing what I plan.
Hic sunt leones.
Hic sunt leones,
I echo, saving my last look for Mustang. Not the man who hanged my wife. She doesn't notice. I leave the bridge with Sevro at a dead sprint. Something hits Sarah's ship. Her hull shudders. They know we don't have Lysander.
Howlers, get up!
I thought you said...
Up!
Harpy throws up her hands. Red secondary lights bathe the launch bay in bloody hues as Sevro and I load ourselves into the cold star shells. It takes two howlers each to help us slip into the robotic carapaces. I lie in the armor as Harpy buckles my feet into the stirrups and closes the armored legs over my meat and bones. The howlers are fast in their movements, even as the ship lurches with another near missile strike. A siren howls, reporting a hull breach. I try to slow my breath as Victra fits my head into the Starshell's helmet.
Good luck.
She leans her face close. Before I can stop her, she presses her lips to mine. I do not recoil, not this close to death. I let her lips part and cling warm and comforting around mine. Then the human moment is over, and she's gone, lowering the massive visor of my helmet. My howlers howl and hoot at the sight. I can't help but wish it was Mustang who sealed me in this tin can and kissed me goodbye. But then the digital display owns my vision, and I disappear from my friends into the metal launch tube. I'm alone and scared. Focus. I'm cocooned, belly down, in the spit tube. This is where most would piss themselves, separated from friends, from the warmth of life. There's no gravity in the tube. It isn't pressurized. I hate the weightlessness of it. I can't look up or my neck will break when they launch me. I can't move side to side. My star shell is latched into 1,000 tooth-like magnetic hooks. They click into place like tiny insects chattering. In moments, they'll shoot me into space. My breath rasps. My heart rattles against my sternum. I drink in my body's terror and smile. They said this was suicide at the academy when I wanted to launch myself. Maybe they were right. But this is why I was made. To dive into hell. I'm a beetle of a man in a carapace of metal, weapons and engines that cost more than most ships. I've got a pulse cannon on my right arm. When I need it, it will bloom like a hemanthus blossom. I think of the time Io laid a hemanthus before my front door, the time I plucked one from the wall on the night that I was supposed to win the laurel. How far away those warm days seem from this cold place, where petals are metal instead of soft like silk.
We're getting pinned in. Boarding party's imminent. Priming your launch.
The ship moans as another missile almost claims us. Our shields are shot. Just the rickety hull holding us together.
Aim true.
Always. Darrow.
Her silence says a thousand things.
I'm sorry.
Good luck.
This is not fun.
The ship's hydraulic system hisses, and the metal teeth jerk me forward in the tube, loading me into the chamber. Inches before my head, the magnetic stream of the railgun hums dreadfully, daring me to glance its way. They say that many Golds can't take this, that even Peerless can panic and scream and cry in the spit tube. I believe it. Pixies would have heart attacks right now. Some cannot even ride in a spaceship for fear of small places in the vastness of space. Soft-bellied fools. I was born in a home smaller than the cargo bay of this ship. I made my life at the end of a claw drill that makes this tube look like a child's toy. All while sweating and pissing my soul away in a fry suit cobbled together from scrap. Still, there's the terror.
Watch how a pit viper strikes, my son.
Father once clutched me by my wrist and made me play this game.
Watch it coil upward and upward till it reaches its crest. Don't move before then. Don't strike out with your sling blade. If you do, then it'll get you. It'll kill you. Move just when it's coming down. Do that with the terror in life. Don't act till you're as scared as you'll get. Then.
He snapped his fingers. I'm at that point when the music of the machines takes hold. The clicks and the clacks. The hisses and the hums reverberate through the hull. A countdown begins.
Ready over there, Goblin?
Cacatne Ursus and Silvis.
Does a bear shit in the woods? The ship spins and shudders. More sirens howl.
Latin now?
Audentes fortuna juvet.
Fortune favors the bold. You deserve to die if that's really going to be the last thing you say in this life.
Well, you may suck my...
My heart sticks to its downward beat. The metal teeth jerk me forward into the tube's magnetic stream. And it happens. Even through my suit, G-forces hit me like the backhand of the Obsidian's thunder god. My vision flickers black. Stomach rises into throat. Lungs constrict. Blood slows in my veins. I snap forward. Lights flicker in my eyes. I don't see the walls of the tube I'm shot through. I don't even see the ship that brought me here. I see Io's face in the darkness. I black out. Bodies can't take this. Too fast. Darkness. Then the darkness has holes. Stars. There's no mean time. 1 second I'm on the ship, the next I'm ripping through the deep of space at 10 times the speed of sound. Many shit their suits at this point. It's not a fear thing. It's biology and physics. The human body can take only so much. Mickey, the carver, made sure mine could take just a little bit more. I hope Severo's can too. I rip soundlessly through space. Trust that Severo is near me. Can't see him, even on the sensors. All too fast. Toward the greatest ship in the Scepter Armada, the one we should avoid. It all happens in 6 seconds. Emergency missiles streak past us. The gunners see us now, know what's happening. but we're not using thrusters, so the missiles can't lock. Flak can't detonate on so short a fuse. The unspent canisters fly past us, nearly hitting me. Our pilot took a perfect shot. Railguns miss us. Projectiles flash past. Severo is howling in the comm. Their shields are down. They can't bring them up fast enough. It takes time. Iridescent blue flickers over their hull as the pulse shields power up. Too late, you sons of bitches. Too bloody damn late. I can't think. I'm screaming inside, laughing like the flames of a wildfire. Laughing because I know it is my madness that these logical warriors cannot fight. The bridge is close. I spare a look up, see Gauls inside roaring at one another, rushing to their evac suits or escape pods, staring at us approach like Mustang did when my horses of House Mars crashed into her and Pax in a muddy field. Our rage is something unique, something these Loonborn don't understand. Blues scatter. Obsidians pull their weapons. Two Golds don breath masks and unfurl razors, readying for the kill. The second before we hit, I shoot my pulse cannon. It thumps on the thick glass. I shoot again, and again, and again. Then, I curl into a ball and smash into the thick bridge glass with the full velocity of my launch, as well as a last-second burst from my thruster boots. Out of me roars a madman's scream. I explode through the bridge like a ball of lead shot into a store of china and glass. I crash into displays and strategy desks before blasting through the reinforced metal of the bridge walls, through the steel of the hallways, till at last I slam bodily into a bulkhead 100 meters through and past the bridge. Dazed. Can't find Severo.
Severo! Severo!
I call him over the comm. He groans something about his ass. Maybe he did shit himself. We can't hear it because of our helmets, but the ship is filled with howling as the vacuum of space sucks crew members to their deaths. It really doesn't suck them out through the shattered windows so much as the internal pressure of the ship pushes them out. Either way, blues and oranges and golds fly screaming into space. The obsidians go silently. Not that it matters. Space makes all silent in the end. My left arm spits sparks. My pulse cannon is shredded. Inside the suit, my arm hurts like hell. I have a concussion. I puke inside my helmet. Fills it with a bitter stench. Stings the nostrils. But I keep my feet. And my right arm works well enough. View shield is cracked. I stumble as I'm sucked toward the bridge too. I crawl back through the holes I made in the walls, make it to the bridge to find the place in chaos. Crew members hold onto anything to prevent themselves from being sucked into the cold darkness. A gold girl flips past me and flies out the bulkhead. Finally, red lights flash. Emergency bulkheads slam shut all over this part of the ship to cut the pressure leak. One begins to close behind me, reinforcing a wall that I crashed through. I hold it up when I see Severo coming. The metal groans against the robotic arm of my starship. Severo dives through just in time, and the door slams shut. Bridge is locked down with us inside. Perfect. The pressure wind dies behind us as Durasteel slats slide over the demolished viewports. The ship's officers and crew pick themselves up from the ground, gasping for breath. But there is none. Oxygen and pressure are still being pumped back into the room. So those with breathing masks, the golds, obsidians and blues, watch placidly as the few pink valets and orange technicians on the bridge flop like fish, gasping for air that is not there. One pink vomits blood, his lungs exploding in his chest because he tried to hold his breath. The blues watch the deaths in horror. They have never seen men die. They are used to seeing blips on the scanners disappearing. Perhaps a distant ship exploding or gouting flame as it is boarded by obsidians and greys. Their understanding of the mortal coil is being adjusted. The obsidians and golds don't react to the scene. Some of the greys attempt to administer aid, but it is too late. By the time the pressure and oxygen levels are normalized, the low colors are dead. I'll never forget those faces. I brought them this. How many families will weep because of what I did here? In anger, I stomp my metal boot on the steel deck 3 times. And those who did nothing while their allies died turn to see Sevro and me in our killing suits. Oh, how those gold and obsidian faces finally emote. An obsidian charges us with a force pike. Sevro hits him once, crushing the huge man with a metal fist. The other 4 link together and attack us, keening one of their hideous war chants. Sevro meets them, delighted to finally be the biggest in the room. I engage a squad of greys who scramble for their weapons. This is the way it goes. We're men of metal, fighting disorganized men of flesh, like steel fists punching the inside of a watermelon. I've never killed men with so little regard, and it frightens me how easy I find it in war. There is no ambiguity here, no violation of moral creed. These people are war colors. They kill me, or I kill them. It's simpler than the passage. Simpler that I don't know them. That I don't know their brothers and sisters. That I use metal instead of my own flesh to drive them through death's dark door. I am good at it. Better by worlds than Sevro. And that terrifies me above all else. I am the Reaper. Whatever doubts I had in myself fall away. And I feel the stain creeping over my soul. We do our best to save the blues. The bridge is large, but there aren't many obsidians or greys with projectile and energy weapons. No reason for them here. No one has ever come through the viewports. 2 female golds with razors are the true menace. One is tall and broad. The other has a quick face that is pinched with desperation as she charges us. With their razors, they could cut even our suits in half. So Sevro blasts them from a distance with his pulse cannon, overloading their aegises and splashing the energy onto armor, where it overloads the pulse shields and eats into the armor, melting the golds. This is why they control technology. Humans, no matter their color, are fragile as doves in the meat grinder of war. My enemy's dead. I turn now to the blues in the pits.
Is there a captain?
In my suit, I stand nearly a meter taller than them. They're still staring at the mess we made of the others. I must be a walking nightmare. Arm spitting sparks, suit half ruined, holding a terrible razor.
I don't have all day to threaten and stomp. You are erudite men and women. This is not your ship. You merely occupy it for the gold who commands it. I now command it. So, is there a blue captain about?
The captain survived. He's a placid, clean-looking man. More limbs than torso. With a fresh gash on his face that pains him terribly. He trembles and sniffles, holding the wound as though his face would fall apart were his hands to leave it. Mother would have called him a shit-eating ninny-priss. Io would have taken a different tack. So I stand over him and speak quietly.
You are safe. Do not attempt anything rash.
I pop my helmet. The sick drips out. Now, I tell him he's to go to the corner and strip off his star badge of rank. Trembling, he doesn't get a chance to obey. Severo lurches forward, takes his badge, and picks him up and moves him like a doll. A long-faced, proud-shouldered woman with deep olive skin snorts at the demotion. Her gaze is peculiarly shrewd for a blue. Bald, like the rest, with digital azure tattoos swirling not only along crown and temples, but over hands and neck. Severo lopes back to me.
Severo, stop pissing around.
I like being big.
I'm still bigger.
He tries flipping me the crux in his suit, but the mechanical fingers aren't so agile. I give orders to the blues in the tech pits that our friends in the Stork are to be given access to one of the hangar bays. After settling themselves back into their stations, they obey. All here are loyal, because I have them under my power. But throughout the ship, who knows? They may be loyal to the Sovereign, or they may only be loyal to the man who rules this ship. It'd be foolish to think they all operate under the same creed. I'll have to make them. I watch the Stork coast into a hangar bay on a display. She's barely held together by her bolts. Two leechcraft festoon her. My howlers will have to fight off the squads of killers they contained. They might manage, but if the Vanguard's obsidians and greys besiege them in the hangar, then all is lost. Sounds come now from the bulkhead that connects the bridge with the rest of the ship. A deep spine hissing. The door glows red from heat. A small pupil in the center of the thick grey durasteel. Obsidians, or grey marines, no doubt led by some gold, endeavour to reclaim the ship. Should take them a little while.
Is there a holocam in the hall?
The blues hesitate.
Black space, you daft gasbags.
The female blue I noted before curses and pushes another blue out of the way and syncs her tattoos with the console. A hollow appears on one of the screens, confirming my fear. Golds lead the party attempting to make their way onto the bridge.
Show me the engine room, the life support nexuses, and the hangar bay.
She does. Again, Golds lead parties of Grey Marines and Obsidian Slave Knights to secure the ship's vital systems. They'll try to wrest control of it away from me. Worse, they'll try to board or destroy the Stork, to kill or capture Mustang and my friends.
Who wants this ship?
I stalk along the raised command podium, kicking aside a body in my way, and look down at the communications blues in their pit. They dodge my gaze. Two women, no older than I. Faces pale and fresh, like morning snow, now stained with tear tracks and grime. Wide, cerulean eyes, raw-rimmed and shot with red. They've seen friends die today. And here I rage, selfishly, acting as though this is my triumph. It's so easy to lose myself. Never forget what I am, I remind myself. Never forget.
Vanguard, status report.
We're being hailed by a dozen ships and the Citadel Ground Command. What's happened? They want to know. Torch ships and destroyers coast warily toward us. I open a closed circuit comm channel to the whole of my ship.
Attention! Crew of the vessel formerly known as the Vanguard, hereafter known as the Pax.
I pause dramatically, knowing that any good song, any good dance, is a game of tension, leading to a climax of sound and movement. Severo can't stop grinning boyishly at me. He looks like an imp in the huge suit, head so small with his helmet off. He makes a big motion with his hands to try to make me laugh. I shake my head at him. Now isn't the time.
My name is Darrow Au Andromedus, Lancer of the Martian House Augustus, and I have claimed this vessel as a spoil of war. It is mine. This means, per societal rules of naval warfare, that your lives are mine. I am sorry for that, because it means you will likely all die. Your lives have been dedicated to one vocation or another. Electronics, astral navigation, gunnery, janitorial service, lighting and repair, martial combat. My vocation is conquest. They teach us it in schools. And in school, they instructed me on the proper method of invading, seizing, and possessing an enemy warship. After one has captured the bridge of an enemy-held vessel, the procedure taught to us is simple. Vent the ship.
Zevro activates the hidden console secured in the backside of a navigation display, one only golds can access. The blues recoil in surprise. It is like going into a man's kitchen and showing him a nuclear bomb hidden under his sink. The console scans Severo's golden sigil and blinks gold. All he need do is push in a code, and the entire ship will open to space. 20,000 men and women will die.
We made these ships so we could empty them. Why? Not because we distrust your loyalty. In fact, we rely on that. But because there are still...
I look at the roster one of the blues gives me.
61 golds on board. They are loyal to the Sovereign. I am her enemy. They will not obey me. They will sabotage the ship, attempt to take the bridge. They will rally you, abuse your loyalty, and lead you to certain death. Because of them and their hatred of me, you will never see your loved ones again. There is yet another complication. Beyond this hull, the Sovereign wonders what happened here. Soon, she will realize the pride of her armada no longer belongs to her. It is mine. Her praetors' ships will vomit out squadrons of leechcraft, carrying legions of obsidians and grey marines. They will be led by gold knights who want my head, fully prepared to kill all in their path. If I vent you into space, there will be no one to stop them from killing me. So you see, you are my salvation, and I am yours. I will not sacrifice 20,000 of you to kill 61 of my enemies. I chose this vessel above all others because of its crew, the best the society can offer. To me, you are not expendable. So what I ask of you is this: choose me as your commander, and overwhelm those golds who think you expendable. You have my permission, my warrant, and the badge of the Arch-Governor of Mars, Nero our Augustus, to capture or kill your gold commanders for me. Take their weapons and subdue them. Then make fast the ship against the invaders who come to destroy us. Do it now. If you wait, they will kill you. I will know the first men and women to rise up. As your new master, I will reward you. The Arch-Governor will reward you. Do it now, for I have just opened every armory throughout the ship. Seize weapons and neutralize the tyrants.
A heavy silence as the first sparks of revolution are struck. Zevro comes close.
That was rousing.
Too democratic?
I don't think autocratic democracy counts. You did threaten to vent them into space.
Threaten? I thought I implied it rather smoothly.
As smooth as gravel, dipshit.
Zevro cackles a bit too enthusiastically and slaps his leg with his mech hand, denting the metal there. He winces, then looks up at me, slightly embarrassed.
Slag off.
The door behind us begins to hiss. I turn to look at the glowing bulkhead. My enemies have brought a drill to assail me. My hands shake from the adrenaline. I feel the weight of dozens of blue eyes. The red of the door deepens, spreading. We haven't long. My razor ripples into killing form, long and terrible.
Company soon.
I glance at Severo, who has been distracted by one of the holoscreens.
Find cover.
I order the blues to take shelter.
They're doing it. Corey, hell, Darrow, come look.
He cycles through live visuals of oranges and blues ransacking the armories. Some greys help them. Others stand by, unsure of their prerogative, even as others shoot at the tide of their fellow shipmates. But no bullets can hold back this tide. They take weapons, run sloppily through halls, swelling their ranks. The roughest lead, not blues, but orange hangar workers and mechanics, along with greys. One I recognize. The middle-aged corporal on my ship at the academy. The one who escaped with us. He directs a score of men and women into the stateroom of a gold. They subdue him, respectfully. That peaceful accord is not far spread. Three powerful squads of golds, leading obsidians and greys, marshal in the life support rooms, at the engines 5 kilometers back to the aft of the ship, and just outside the bridge door. Those outside the bridge door number 4 golds and 6 obsidians. 10 greys load weapons behind them.
We're still going to have company.
They'll be coming through the door at any moment. Sparks spit from the inside of the bulkhead as their heat drill gets the better of the door. Metal drips inward, bubbling to the floor. The blues shiver in terror, and Severo and I square ourselves up and don our helmets, preparing for the new onslaught. Again, the stench of my sick fills my nostrils. We tell the blues to hide in the communications bay. They'll be safe there. A comm light suddenly blinks on a console near me. Instinctively, I answer. A voice like thunder sends tremors through my bones. There is no visual.
Can you hear me?
I can.
I glance over at Severo. Whoever calls us is using a voice amplifier that sounds like the breaking of thunder. Severo shrugs, as if he hasn't a clue who it is.
Who is this?
Are you a god?
A god? An eerie quiet settles in me. That is no voice amplifier. I should have known by the cold, sluggish accent. I choose my words carefully, remembering my lore.
I am Darrow Au Andromedus of the Sunborn.
You took the vessel and you are not yet praetor. How?
I flew in through the bridge.
Alone? From the abyss.
With a companion?
I will come to meet you and your companion, godchild.
The blues look to one another in terror. They mouth something. Stained. The heaviness of fear settles on my shoulders. Severo and I peer around the bridge, as though the beast were hiding somewhere in the shadows. More of the door peels away, dripping inward like some glowing red, rotting fruit. Then, one of the blues gasps, and we glance back at the HD monitor to see the cameras in the halls outside the bridge door relaying a scene of horror. He runs at them from behind as they prepare to make entry into the bridge. An obsidian, but larger than any I've ever seen. But it's not just his size. It's how he moves. A dread creature, stitched from shadow and muscle and armor. Flowing, not running. Perverse. Like looking at a blade or a weapon made flesh. This is a creature that dogs would flee, that cats would hiss at. One that should never exist on any level above the first tier of hell. He smashes into the kill squad from behind with 2 pulsing white ion blades that extend out of his armor, 3 feet from his hands. The greys he simply runs through, crushing them into the walls with his shoulders, splintering their bones. Then he starts the real killing. It's so savage, I have to look away. The heat drill continues melting the door of its own accord, and in its center forms a hole. Through it, I can see men and women dying. Blood sizzles on the overheated metal. When the stained is done, he's bleeding from 12 wounds, and there's only one gold left. She stabs him with a razor, piercing his dark armor through the breastplate. He twists his body, locking the blade in, and then clutching it when she lets the blade relax back into a whip. Then he grabs her by the helmet, her golden armor glittering under the hall's lights. She tries to escape, tries to scramble away, but like a lion with a hyena in its jaws, he needs simply squeeze. When she is gone, he lays her gently on the ground, tender now that he's brought her a good death. Severo involuntarily steps back from the door.
Mother mercy.
The Stained stands on the other side, the door between us slowly melting from the center. When the hole in the door is the size of a torso, he removes his helmet. A hairless, pale face stares at me. Eyes black, wind-weathered cheeks armored with calluses like the hide of a rhinoceros. Head bald, except for a meter-long white shock of hair that hangs to his mid-back. He locks eyes with me.
Godchild Andromedus, I am Ragnar Volaris, the Stained firstborn of my mother, Alia Snow Sparrow, of the Valkyrie Spires, north of the Dragon Spine, south of the Falling City, where the Winged Horror flies, brother of Sephi the Quiet, breaker of tunnels, which once stood by the water. And I make you an offering of stains.
He splays out his gigantic, blood-stained hands, and then reaches through the door with his right hand. His ion blades retract into his armor. The razor still juts out of his ribs. I'm pissing my bloody damn suit.
Well, frag me blind.
Do it, Darrow, before it changes its mind.
Taking my helmet off, I step forward. I want this one.
Ragnar Volaris, well met. I see you wear no badge. Do you have a master?
I bore the mark of the Ash Lord and was to be presented as a gift with this great vessel to the family Julii. But you took this vessel, and so you have taken me.
A gift for their betrayal of Augustus, no doubt. And did he just use a bureaucratic loophole to justify killing his master's men? If there's irony in his voice, I can't find it. But why would he do that? Do those black eyes of his know me? Stained cannot use tech other than military materiel. He could never have seen me before. Yet his hand remains, waiting to grip mine.
Why do you do this? Is it the Julii?
They trade my kind.
I had forgotten. It is Julii ships that carry obsidian slaves across the abyss. They know to fear the speared son of Victor's family crest. He is not practiced at hiding his hate. It is cold as the ice the man was born into.
Will you accept these stains, godchild?
He leans forward, voice plaintive, a strange worry creasing the corners of his mouth. Golds did this. After the Dark Revolt, the only uprising to ever threaten their reign. We took their history, took their technology, wiped out a generation, and gave their race the poles of planets, the religion of the Norse, and told them we were their gods. A few hundred years later, I stand looking up at one of their most terrifying sons, and wonder how he can think of me as a god.
I accept these stains in my name, Ragnar Volaris.
Terrified, I reach forward and, with superheated metal surrounding our arms, clasp hands, nearly equal in size, though mine is sheathed in metal. I take the blood that his hand spreads to mine and wipe it over my exposed brow.
I accept their burden and their weight.
Thank you, Sunborn. Thank you. I will serve on the honor of my mother and her mother before her.
I have friends aboard the Stork in Hangar Bay 3. Save them, Ragnar. and I will owe you a debt.
Yellow teeth are revealed as he smiles. And from him undulates a war chant deeper than the ocean at storm. It fills the halls with dread, fills me with joy and fear and primal curiosity. What did I just gain?